Welcome to HN Pod, your daily dose of the top stories and most interesting debates from Hacker News. I am Sarah.
And I am Mike. Today is Wednesday, September 2nd, 2026, and this is episode 506. As always, we are bringing you the best conversations from yesterday, September 1st.
We have a fantastic lineup for you today. We will be talking about Anthropic's new Claude Fable and Mythos 5.1 models, a really frustrating situation between the open source app AnkiDroid and Google Play, a blazing fast native Spotify client that has everyone feeling nostalgic, a passionate defense of the Firefox browser, and finally, a deep dive by Dan Liu into the accuracy of AI skeptic Ed Zitron.
Let us jump right in with our top story, which pulled in nearly 1,200 points. Anthropic just announced Claude Fable 5.1 and Claude Mythos 5.1.
Right. So to clarify right off the bat, these two are actually the exact same underlying model. The difference is the safeguards. Fable 5.1 is the general release for everyone, while Mythos is locked behind trusted access programs with very specific safeguards designed for cybersecurity and life sciences.
The big headline here is the massive performance jump for coding and knowledge work, combined with a 25% price drop for typical workloads. That price drop is largely driven by reduced pricing on cache reads. If you are doing agentic workloads where you pass the same context over and over, Anthropic says you could see up to 45% savings. Plus, they are introducing a zero data retention policy for enterprise customers, which is huge for corporate adoption.
But what really caught my eye in the Hacker News comments was the discussion around the model's writing style. Felix Riesberg, who works at Anthropic, chimed in saying that beyond the benchmark scores, Fable 5.1 is a massive improvement in prose. It sounds a lot less stereotypically AI. We all know that classic Claude smell, that slightly overly verbose, flowery language that just screams language model.
Exactly. There was a fascinating thread branching off that, debating whether language models should default to something called simplified technical English. One user pointed out how exhausting it is to read through massive blocks of vibe coding handoff documents that are just packed with dense, almost unintelligible AI prose. They argued that a strict, standardized English would make AI outputs much easier to parse.
But another user had a great counterpoint to that. They theorized that the older Opus models might actually write like that because they are optimizing for other agents, packing lots of signal into fewer words for long-running tasks, even if it sounds cringe or weird to human readers.
That is a very sci-fi concept. AI is basically developing their own shorthand that humans find grating but machines find efficient. It reminds me of the book Void Star, where AI stop bothering with human language entirely. But for now, I think most developers on Hacker News are just going to be thrilled that Fable 5.1 can fix their million and one edge case bugs without sounding like a Victorian novelist trying to pad a word count.
Moving on to our next story, this one really struck a nerve with the community. AnkiDroid, which is a wildly popular open source flashcard app, is being threatened with removal from the Google Play Store.
Yeah, this is a classic App Store monopoly headache. Google is rejecting their recent updates because AnkiDroid links to their Open Collective page for donations. Open Collective is a registered 501c6 nonprofit, which acts as a fiscal host for open source projects. But Google's payment policy specifically demands a 501c3 charity, or a local equivalent, to qualify for tax-exempt donations outside of Google's own billing system.
So because they are a C6, which is categorized as a business league, rather than a traditional C3 charity, Google's automated reviewers are saying they are violating the payments policy. AnkiDroid is being forced to rip out their donation links entirely just to stay on the store for their 10 million users.
The Hacker News comments were understandably heated about this. People were comparing this to 2019 when Google temporarily booted the WireGuard VPN up for similarly opaque reasons. It sparked a massive debate about the dangers of the mobile duopoly and how much power these gatekeepers have over independent developers.
One commenter brought up the boiling frog analogy. We have gotten so used to these walled gardens that our baseline for acceptable corporate behavior has completely shifted. Sure, you can sideload AnkiDroid via FDroid or download the APK directly, but let's be real, 99% of users will never do that. They just use the Play Store that comes pre-installed on their phone.
And then, of course, there was the inevitable comparison to Apple. Some users argued Google is just playing catch-up to Apple's strict ecosystem control. But as another commenter sharply noted, defending Google by pointing at Apple is pure whataboutism. What Google is doing to an open-source, volunteer-driven educational app is just objectively hostile, regardless of what Apple does.
It really highlights the precarious position of open source on mobile platforms. You are entirely at the mercy of an automated review process and rigid corporate policies that simply do not account for modern open source funding models like Open Collective. It is a tough spot for the AnkiDroid team.
Let us pivot to something a bit more joyful. A project called FastPodify hit the front page yesterday, and it is exactly what it sounds like. It is a native, lightning-fast Spotify client for desktop.
Built in Rust using the eGUI framework and Liberspot, this thing is a breath of fresh air. It starts in well under a second and uses maybe 100 to 250 megabytes of RAM. Compare that to the official Spotify desktop app, which is basically a heavy web browser running in Electron that eats up your system resources.
The developer even threw in a Winamp mini player mode and support for the Milk Drop visualizer, which is an amazing hit of nostalgia for anyone who was downloading MP3s in the early 2000s. But the discussion on Hacker News quickly turned into a massive venting session about the state of the official Spotify app.
Oh, people definitely let loose. One user called Spotify the worst piece of software they use on a daily basis, citing the slow load times, the constant A/B testing madness, and the bizarre usability inconsistencies. Like how on the mobile app, you cannot swipe right to cue a suggested song, even though that gesture works everywhere else in the app.
Someone brought up Conway's Law, which is the idea that software inevitably reflects the communication structures of the organization that built it. They pointed out that Spotify's famous self-organizing squad model from a decade ago resulted in an app where every UI pane is essentially its own independent iframe universe.
Right. You can literally feel that the team building the sidebar clearly does not talk to the team building the play queue. Another user mentioned how the video team forced the lock screen controls to say video available instead of the album name, and when you disable video entirely, it just leaves a blank space. It is a classic case of a company shipping their org chart to the user.
It is funny, though. Despite all the complaining, people in the thread admitted they still use it. The stickiness of the social features, the shared playlists, and the annual Spotify Wrapped summaries keep people locked in. But FastPodify proves that we don't have to accept bloated web wrappers if we just want a clean, fast way to listen to music while we code.
Speaking of not accepting the default, our fourth story is an article titled, "Hang On to Your Firefox." It is a plea from a blogger urging tech users not to abandon the Firefox browser over minor squabbles.
The author was reacting to a prominent tech blogger who recently switched to the Vivaldi browser simply because Mozilla maintains an active presence on X, formerly Twitter. The author points out the sheer hypocrisy of this, noting that Vivaldi is also on X, not to mention Meta's Threads and Google's YouTube. The core argument is that Firefox is our last best hope for browser engine diversity.
If Firefox dies, the open web is basically just Google Chrome and its Chromium spin-offs like Edge, Brave, and Vivaldi. The only other engine would be Apple Safari, which realistically only survives because Apple forces it as the default on iPhones. The Hacker News thread on this was deeply introspective about the community's relationship with Mozilla.
It really was. You had one camp saying, look, people complain about Firefox on Hacker News exactly because they care. It is the power users who get frustrated when Mozilla focuses on acquiring odd tech companies or pushing weird UI changes instead of focusing on core browser performance and privacy. They complain because they want Firefox to be better.
But another commenter pushed back on that, saying a lot of tech users justify switching to Chrome through sheer inertia and lazy excuses. They claim Firefox breaks the sites they need for work, but in reality, web compatibility on Firefox has been fantastic for years.
A web developer chimed in saying they use Firefox as their primary dev browser on a 10-year-old Debian laptop, and it runs perfectly. They made a really vital point that using a Chromium-based browser, even a privacy-focused one like Brave or Vivaldi, still gives Google massive unchecked influence over the future of web standards. We are seeing that play out right now with Google's push for Manifest V3, which severely limits ad blockers.
It really comes down to a moral compromise. Do you tolerate Mozilla's occasional management missteps to keep an independent web engine alive? Or do you hand the keys entirely over to the Chromium monopoly for a perceived slight edge in performance? For the Hacker News crowd, the consensus still leans heavily toward keeping Firefox alive, even if they reserve the right to complain about it every step of the way.
Our final story today is a meticulous, long-form takedown by Dan Liu titled, "How Accurate Have Ed Zitron's AI Skeptic Predictions Been?"
For some context, Ed Zitron has built a massive following recently as one of the loudest, most aggressive AI skeptics on the internet. He frequently predicts the imminent collapse of the generative AI industry and the tech giants backing it. Dan Liu, who is beloved on Hacker News for his incredibly thorough,
data-driven analysis, decided to actually check the receipts on Zitron's claims.
And the receipts do not look good for Zitron. Dan looked at a specific November 2024 prediction where Zitron claimed Meta, Google, and Microsoft were dying companies, and that their push into AI was just a desperate thrashing to find growth because their core products were failing.
Dan just pulls up the actual financial data. Meta, Google, and Microsoft have all seen massive, sustained revenue and profit growth over the last 3 years. The idea that their core businesses are dying ecosystems is just factually, demonstrably incorrect.
Dan points out that Zitron cherry-picks outlier data to support his narrative. For example, he cited a random third-party estimate claiming Facebook active users were dropping, while completely ignoring Meta's actual reported financials that show growth. The Hacker News comments were really interesting here, dissecting why people still listen to him if his numbers are so wrong.
One user, Juho Snellman, noted that Zitron's aggressive, expletive-laden writing style is perfectly tailored to hype up people who already hate AI. It is essentially an anti-tech grift. People cite him not because his economic analysis is sound, but because he sounds angry, he sounds authoritative, and he confirms their existing biases.
There was a great debate in the comments about the nature of predictions themselves. Some people tried to defend Zitron, saying that predicting the future is hard, and even tech optimists like Sam Altman get timelines wrong. But others pointed out the massive difference between being early on the market correction versus building an entire argument on fundamentally flawed economic analysis.
Exactly. Predicting an AI bubble popping is one thing. Claiming Microsoft is a dying company in 2024 to justify your hatred of AI is just bad analysis. As Dan Liu concluded, Zitron is not just wrong on the outcomes, he is wrong on the underlying reasoning. And yet, it is a perfect example of the modern engagement economy. Sounding absolutely certain and very angry is often far more profitable than being nuanced and correct.
That is a wrap for today's episode of HN Pod. We covered a lot of ground today, from the shifting landscape of frontier AI models to the constant ongoing battles for open source funding and an independent web.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoy the show, please share it with a friend or a coworker who loves Hacker News as much as we do. We will be back tomorrow with more of the top stories. Have a great day.